You're listening to the Cerberus Podcast with a K, available on Cerberus.com, iTunes, Stitch.com, and Audio Boo.
Now, dear listener, it is time once again for the Podcast with a K. That's right, Cerberus, on Stitch.com and Audio Boo. And now we beseech you, please give your attention to Stage Right, and welcome your first host, Christian Colley. Next up, James McLean. And finally, but not least, Brian Terranova.
Thank you for that possibly overwhelming and probably slightly over the top introduction by Russell Hugo there. Welcome, dear listener. It's the three of us this week on the podcast. There's some weird stuff going down in the Hooniverse. Who are you going to call? Possibly us. I don't know. Hey, so good weekend, guys. How have you been?
Wow, this seems like a familiar conversation. Is anybody else getting deja vu with that? Me?
Just you? Okay.
Good. Hey, I'm good.
Yeah.
Deja vu.
Well,
I mean, he asks it most weeks. So, I mean, not only the fact that he asked us before we came on live, but he asked us. So, yeah, deja vu is like is a multiplicity here, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Well, I had a great weekend. Thank you for asking, because no one ever asked me. So I had a lovely weekend, thank you.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm well. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. I'm doing good.
How was the weekend?
I've been saving people. Hey, my weekend was all right, thank you, yeah. We did the dancing thing with the kids. I went to Frankie and Benny's. I went to IKEA for the first time.
Oh, you're doing what my grandmother experience. Does. You're mistaking the polite etiquette of asking how it is with the actual truth that we don't care,
yes,
but we're just asking out of politeness.
Yes. It's like having David Mitchell on sometimes. It really is.
David Mitchell? Me?
So podcast time, and there's some crazy, weirdy rumours. We'll start with that crazy, weirdy rumour, shall we? Because it's kind of crazy and weirdy. And, wow, it's pretty, you know, let's just emphasize, because Facebook's going batshit crazy over this, saying, why are you reporting this shit? Not in so many words, but basically that's the message. And I think the secret, the hint of this comes with the word rumor that I've managed to append to the title of the article. Has the 13th Doctor been cast? Bracket rumor, close bracket. And then, do you know what I did? I used this thing called language to litter words throughout the article, like rumor and allegedly and rumor. So those of you out there who are making these endless stupid comments going, why are you reporting this? It's clearly bollocks. Most rumors are bollocks. Now, what I'm probably doing actually is preaching to the choir, because you're podcast listeners, you're a podcast listener, so you're probably with me on this. But oh dear God, it gets my goat in the name of Rassilon.
Don't say that.
Okay, I won't say that. So anyway, just in case you didn't know about this batshit crazy rumor, bizarre reports from MoviePilot.com, which isn't, you know, it's kind of the star of the internet in terms of movie news. Anyway, The 2015 Christmas special will see the 12th Doctor meeting a ghost of Christmas yet to come in a rehash of the basic idea behind 2008's The Next Doctor. Says MoviePilot.com, sources have revealed, you know, it's obviously bollocks. Following the departure of his companion Clara Oswald, the Doctor is set to encounter River Song in the far future whilst battling an alien menace. It's Doctor Who, so there was a good chance of that. But that's not all. The duo also briefly encounter the Doctor's next incarnation along the way in a controversial first for the show. The actor, who is currently unnamed, is said to be just 20 years old, sporting a blue suit with matching pea coat and sunglasses. What's a pea coat? Is that a coat shaped like a pea? What
it's
is
called,
that?
Sailor's military coat, pea coat.
Yeah, pea coats. They're quite fashionable sometimes,
they
depending
are, yeah.
on whether it's fashionable or not.
Yeah, I think that's usually the way it works.
It is, yeah, but yeah. some people don't quite get that.
But,
hence, people are unfashionable because everyone thinks they're fashionable or trying to have some sort of personal fashion. But fashion can't be a continual thing. It has to be of a moment.
But should one be fashionable or should one just be stylish?
That's an interesting distinction.
I'm not sure it's an interesting distinction.
I think it is an interesting distinction. I've never heard anyone distinguish between the two before, and I like it.
Okay, I'm glad you like it. Okay, so what do you think of this nonsense, clearly nonsense rumour, Facebook and Twitter?
Why is it nonsense?
Well, it's come from moviepilot.com. But yeah, I mean, it's not obvious. Right, okay. It's a rumour. And rumours are 90% fluff and 10% grain of some vague truth to them.
Where we have, though, there is maybe a grain of truth there.
Well, indeed, there may be. But, I mean, what do you make of it?
Well, it could be a rumour. I'm not quite as it's bullshit as some have, bollocks, sorry, as some have noted in the comments section. I mean, there are rumours that there's a lot of changes coming by 2017. Without going into details, that seems quite certain there'll be some changes in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been a talk. Capaldi has said he'll be leaving sooner rather than later. Again, and we've had two precedents now, the Next Doctor, which sort of tried to play this game, as you point out in the article, and Day of the Doctor, which has had a bit of fun playing this as well. It's an interesting gimmick. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying that I don't think the idea or the concept is as bollocks as people think it could be. It's the sort of thing I could see them doing. Whether they're doing it, it's a different matter. But I don't think the idea is entirely ludicrous from a production point of view.
Okay, Brian.
Well, I mean, obviously, since it has been done before with the Next Doctor, even though this one seems like, going by the rumor, they want it to be the actual Doctor and not somebody who thinks they're the Doctor. You know, I agree with James that the concept is certainly sound. And I wouldn't put it past Moff to recycle an idea again so soon. So, yeah, I mean, I suppose anything is possible, but I would hope that it's completely an untrue and unfounded rumor, just because I don't want to see another, you know, Doctor in their early 20s or 20, as it were. The description of his outfit sounds dreadful. And even if he's going to do a, hey, this is like the 138th Doctor, this way he can cement in the future that regeneration cycles just never end anymore, I would really not like to see another Doctor that gets just one appearance on TV. We've already got two of them. Well, one who has one appearance and a brief appearance. So, yeah, I wouldn't want to see that sort of thing. You know, if you're legitimately setting up the Next Doctor to come, fine. Hopefully the rumors about who's playing it are wrong. But really, I don't know. It does make sense for a River Song story to have a future Doctor in it. I can see how that could work. But,
I mean,
I think not
that's,
interested.
That's the thing which sort of goes against it as a rumor, is that it just coincidentally sort of pops up a few days after River Song's announced, which makes it a sort of almost dovetails with ideas that will be sort of mulling around the fan sphere. You got River Song, you can have future time time things with Doctors. The one thing that I do think is personal, which people don't seem to be particularly picking up on, is if there is an assumption that 2017 sees changes, if that assumption leads us to that Capaldi could be leaving at the end of 2016, especially if he suggested he might be going sooner than later, then you've got a year grace, which is what you normally get between an announcement of a Doctor and their appearance. So you do actually have the right time span to announce a new Doctor prior to them actually showcasing. The only thing I would be a little uncertain of is the details just seem a little too precise. The 20-year-old wearing a blue suit, you know, costumes and everything. You're talking about almost 18 months before it appear that the costumes and everything's being announced. I don't know. identify. I think that is its weakness. But there's a lot of things in there which I don't think is something that people should just sort of totally laugh at.
And by the same token, though, the fact that it is a River Song story, it's ripe for people to go ahead and make rumors that there would be some other Doctor in there as well. You know, so while it has a case for both being valid, or for being valid, I guess I should say, it also has a case for being complete crap. So, I don't know. I don't think it's as far-fetched, considering we've had similar before. I think it's kind of reasonable. I think it's kind of a waste if they do, but, you know.
I think another thing which actually is for it, which again, you know, I mean, it's easy to sort of say it's bollocks because that's what 90% of people will read it will. But, you know, we're here to try and do something that's interesting. So let's all stay on the fat ideas that it could be true just for the sake of being interesting. If 2017 sees changes, and that would probably include a producer change, you could argue, and this is, again, I'm getting a bit of Terra Nova here, it would be very much in Stephen Moffat's mindset to make sure that he gets to define the next Doctor rather than the next person. If he introduces him in the Christmas episode, even if he doesn't carry on to 2017, he owns that Doctor to a degree.
Yeah, he's within his ego to do so, that's for sure.
So you could see it a bit like that. If there was a new Doctor being, if there was a new producer for 2017, then they would probably be in the mix anyway at this point, so they might have some say in anything that was being planned, but it would give Moffat a chance to sort of play with a new Doctor before anyone else. So I could see it from that point of view. But yeah, I mean, I agree. At the moment, it's all vague. But I mean, there's a lot of rumblings of things changing next year, so anyone who just thinks that to hear such weird, outlandish rumours at this point is outlandish is probably... is probably going to be surprised, I think, because I think there will be some changes coming in the year or so.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that turns out. Reaching over to the other side of my office here at Casterbridge Towers. I remember when I used to have a butler to do this sort of thing. He was a Slitheen called Gerald and died in a freak fish and chip accident. What have we got next on this week's podcast? The David Tennant Marathon. Brian, will you be watching the David Tennant Marathon next week?
I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, I've just clarified. This isn't David Tennant doing a race. He's not running for 26 miles. What it is a TV marathon in which the Doctor Who actor, famous for the 10th Doctor and the regenerated 10th Doctor, will be, and as well as Broadchurch, the star of several episodes of Doctor Who that will be screened on on September the 16th on BBC America. And all of your favourite 10th Doctor episodes will be in there, such as The Waltz of Mars and The End of Time, and several others. And I think that's quite cool that they do that kind of thing, don't you? I said I think it's quite cool that they do that kind of thing, don't you? just to thank the harpist there for just reminding us of her existence. Yes, so we don't really get television marathons here in the UK, which annoys me slightly. I mean, you can make one. You can just bang Netflix on, but you don't really get broadcast marathons. Are you guys really into marathoning TV in that way, or do you prefer to marathon episodic along the narrative?
You know, I whenever I marathon, whenever I'm into a show, I'll watch it however I want. Like, for instance, somehow I got on Star Trek The Next Generation again, so I decided to kind of like go through a bunch of the Data and Riker episodes. So I didn't really do anything in order. I just felt like watching character specific episodes. So I guess it's just depending on what I feel like seeing at the time, you know?
Mm-hmm. What about you, James?
But,
sorry. Do go on, Brian.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say marathoning on TV though, like for me, I can't get into it anymore because of the commercials.
Yeah.
But I do remember years ago when, you know, you're just flipping through the channels for something to watch and on would be an episode. Like for instance, with DVDs, we can put on any episode we want. You know, we're streaming, we can do any episode we want. But when something was on TV, you know, that you might see The Girl in the Fireplace, and you might think, oh, you know, that's not one I would normally put on or something like that. And it's somehow it's always better when you turn the channel and it's just on and you have no choice but to watch that one that's on than you putting it on yourself. So I miss that about TV marathoning, but not the commercials.
Okay. What about you, McLean?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a bygone thing now. If you're into sort of watching a lot of the same, you either pick and choose through a streamer. I can't imagine it's that popular. I'd be interested to see whether it stops being popular. I do think there's going to be so many changes in television. As I think I've talked to Christian before, is when you're acquiring shows, sort of first run becomes the really important thing now because there's so many channels which can be showing second run stuff. So you wonder, is it going to get to the point where no one wants to repeat stuff because it's just like sloppy seconds unless they acquire it really cheaply? So everyone's just going to be trying to do new stuff. Then there'll be a couple of streamers or channels which will just do back catalogues. And people who want to do marathons will either be very cheap channels which don't have much else but back catalogues, or streamers which are primarily about back catalogues. And in either way, who needs a marathon anymore? I don't know. It's funny to think it could be a dying breed of television. Hmm. I won't be watching it because I'm not in America.
Well, absolutely.
And I wouldn't be watching it because I've seen all the Tenant ones to death, I think. And yeah. I won't be watching it because I've got Netflix. So
yeah, okay. Well, the episodes are... she starts at 6 a.m. with The Christmas Invasion, jumps to New Earth, Tooth and Claw, School Reunion, Girl in the Fireplace, Rise of the Cybermen, The Age of Steel, The Idiot's Lantern, The Impossible Planet, Army of Ghosts, Doomsday, Gridlock, Human Nature, Family of Blood, Midnight, The Stolen Earth, Journey's End, The Next Doctor, so it loses a big chunk out of series 3 and 4. Then jumps to Planet of the Dead after midnight, Waters of Mars, and at 3 a.m. The End of Time parts 1 and 2.
Bizarre.
Yeah, it is a strange way of doing it.
Especially could that have anything to do with polls again? Like, are those stories that particularly rated well, for instance, and maybe they're like cutting ones that didn't?
Difficult to say.
Right.
I mean, the Idiot's Lantern's in there, so
yeah.
I know.
Do you think it's Piper?
Popular.
Do you think Piper's got a better profile in the States, Brian?
Could be.
Do you think that's why they've?
She is a hugely popular companion here still. I know that for some reason Martha has her supporters, myself being one of them, but she definitely has her supporters among the fans that I know. But she does seem to be one that is frowned upon a lot for whatever reason. And even Donna, she's kind of like up and down. I think going with the Tennant era, most people here, nobody has topped Rose. You know, and then of course Smith fans over here, you know, they just kind of everything. If you're a Smith fan, everything Smith is better is just how they kind of view things, kind of thing. So yeah, Rose is very popular amongst the Ten crowds, that's for sure.
Okay, well, thank you for that insight into Doctor Who fandom in the United States from Brian Turnover.
I get, you know, the biggest thing is that, you know, they didn't want the Doctor to have another kind of relationship so soon after Rose, and that it comes from the shippers kind of angle, which, you know, it's silly. I do kind of agree. I didn't want to see another one, but not because it was like, oh, Rose is the one, just because it was like, okay, we've done that, let's move on.
Yeah.
And of course, we didn't really get another relationship. What we got was a kind of an infatuation type situation that wasn't really reciprocated. And I think, unfortunately, that is what hurt her, because if you look at her as a companion, she is the only one who didn't really have any kind of like, well, the only one of in the new series that of the the main ongoing companions that didn't really have anything kind of supernatural going on with her that made her special in some kind of way. She just did what she did because she was who she was, which makes her actually the best companion of the new series to me, because she just used her own skills that she had learned by being with the Doctor, you know, and he gave her a task and she set about doing it. And I think she was a good character too. I think the unrequited love story did harm her a bit, because even me watching it, as much as I liked her, when they would get to those scenes where, you know, she's trying to get his attention and he's like, oh, Rose, you know, it harmed the stories, because it was kind of like, just do a friend thing. You know, that would be so much better. These stories would be well remembered. You know, we've said it before. Season 3 is one of like the most coherent seasons. It's one of the best seasons, but it's a shame that it's got a companion that people so, for whatever reason, frown upon.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Martha's an interesting one. No, I was just mulling it over. I was mulling over why she's unpopular. I don't actually think she's unpopular per se. I just don't think she generates much interest for some reason, which is even worse in a weird way. I mean, she's not considered like Adric or
no.
Adam or for some people, not everyone, River Song. She just doesn't seem to stand out for people particularly. And I quite liked her at the time. I don't know. I am very reluctant to bring up the racial card, but I do sometimes wonder if there is still a bit of that in society. You know, I don't know. But I just sometimes think, you know, she's not, or, you know, was she just a boring character? I don't know. I didn't find her boring. I thought she was quite good. She seemed quite strong when she needed to be.
Well, do you know, we get into this whole the feminist dimension to Doctor Who fandom. You've got an actress who is part, I think she's part Ghanaian and part Iranian.
Yeah.
She's playing a character who is extremely intelligent and self-motivated, and yet we have to, and you know, she doesn't, there's no problem with the relationship. They have a good relationship and a good rapport on screen, so it's not as if she's, you know, she's not like the first Sarah Jane who we never got to see because she didn't go well with the actor. She's, you know, she's been cast, she's perfectly good in the role. It is such a strange situation.
I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, is there a superficial nature of people who, you know, if people are blonde and blue-eyed, which is what television loves, they seem to become uber popular regardless. If anyone is outside that norm, they have a harder time. So when I sort of say racial, I don't mean that people are racist.
No.
I'm just saying that there's a majority of people, that there's a certain archetype that if you break from, and I think Donna risked it as well. I think Catherine Tate was very suited to Doctor Who and really stood out, which I think which a lot of people were feared of, didn't they? And they grew to love her. So I think some break the trends. I just sometimes wonder if there is still a bit of that there, and which is a shame, because you're right. I mean, she was a strong character. There was it was nice to have a character that wasn't. I know she had this sort of slightly romantic thing with the Doctor. This yearning for, as you say, some unrequited love, but. She wasn't played like a dopey, a dopey TV girl. She didn't. And again, to be fair, they didn't play on any racial aspects or anything like that, as so many shows do, which is, they don't do so much now, which is good, but they used to. So she sort of existed really as a good character, strong woman who wasn't paired off each week, as women often have to be in television. She wasn't belittled particularly. She took it away from the blonde, blue-eyed, you know, need that we have for television. And I just sometimes wonder if those sort of things actually went against her in some way. But then, say, Donna didn't. I don't know. Donna did all the same sort of things. In fact, there was no unrequited love for her. But would she have been damaged if she had love for the Doctor? Because her being a slightly maturer character and not being blonde, I'm not talking about, you know, fans, I'm talking about more about sort of general audiences, would that have been more uncomfortable?
I think, you know, we've talked about this a lot, my friends and I, like trying to figure out what the heck made Martha have that kind of you love her or you hate her kind of thing, if that's really the perception. I mean, I know a lot of us do love her, but I think a lot of it comes down to just anybody who wasn't Rose coming straight after Rose
was
going to be that person that the audience, even the casual audience, because you got to remember, like, while we talk about in terms of shippers, casual audiences got into the show because of Rose and that relationship with the Doctor. You know, a lot of them anyway. Certainly a bulk of the female base that had come on board was part of that. So, you know, it's a bit like taking Mary Jane away from Peter Parker or Lois Lane from Clark Kent. You know, it was something that people were really just going to be up in arms about. So I think had Donna come directly after Rose, she probably would have been met with hostility as well.
Yeah. So, but to come after Martha, unfortunately, she didn't. Yeah. It was a boon for her. But right. Anyone who wasn't that standard attractive young girl archetype, Buffy archetype, which you could even argue that Amy is as well, and to a certain degree Clara is as well, in both the way their characterizations and the fact that they are very generically, aesthetically perfect for television in the way that you see peppered throughout television all the time, as people like the young white middle, well, I know Rose isn't middle class, but you know, pretty, that sits well. I mean, I wonder if they'd copied that. I wonder if they'd done something very similar to Rose, though, as the second companion. I wonder if that would have played better in a weird way for her, even though there'd have been a lot of people who'd have been very antagonistic towards anyone, as you say, coming in after. But I wonder if it was more of the same, whether those sort of people, as you say, who are invested in the Doctor for that sort of romantic edge between a hot, quirky guy and a sexy, beautiful girl that they'd like to aspire to be. You know, is that while Martha came in as being quite unique, very different, not playing that same sort of game? It wasn't that same sort of game plan. I don't know.
Ooh, I think it certainly would have been both ways, even still, if they did intentionally bring someone as another love interest that was reciprocated by the Doctor, because the people who just kind of want that kind of relationship drama aspect, they would probably thrive, you know, in that. But then the people that just think that Rose was the one, they're still going to have an issue no matter what you do. I think the best thing they could have done was simply brought Martha in like they did Donna, just as a friend. And maybe make the characters make jokes that, like, there's no relationship or people keep thinking they're married like they did with Donna. And maybe that would have eased the way because people would have been upset that Rose was gone, but at least here the Doctor had a friend. But I think she still would have been met with hostility even in that situation just because she simply wasn't Rose. And that's by a very select fan base. I think the casual viewers probably would have been more accepting of something like that as well. But I don't know. It's a shame because She, like Eccleston, is one that I thought we should have seen another season with. Certainly after you got over that hump of that relationship kind of awkwardness, seeing them travel just in the understanding that they are friends would have been great in another season. And not to belittle Donna, I really enjoyed Donna's seasons, but I think that would have been a good thing for her to get a season where she was free of all of that.
I suppose she got bits of Torchwood, though, didn't she? She got some Torchwood and some appearances, obviously, in season 4 as well, which I know is not the same thing. But it was nice to see that she did get to live a little more as Martha outside of the shadow of the Doctor, which, and outside of the shadow of the scrutiny of the viewers, who, as you say, probably just didn't like the fact that this was not Rose.
Yeah.
And you know, just didn't connect with that. But yeah, no, I'm always very interested in why these sort of things don't click and why they don't, and whether there was choices. You know, was there a deliberate choice to go with someone who was utterly different to Rose, in the same way that, you know, Peter Davison was utterly different to Tom Baker? You know, was that a choice there, and was that something which she was always going to have to fight hard against? I don't know.
Well, it's we can't really batten down the facts about this, but maybe the listener can. So if the listener would like to comment on Casterbus after the podcast or on Twitter, or even record an audio boom in reply to this audio boom if you're listening on audio boom, because no one's done that yet, and I'd be really interested to see how that happens, if it ever happens, actually. We're going to move on and talk about a bit of merchandise, guys. The new 12th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver remote control is out today.
Cool.
And that is a remote control, and it's a sonic screwdriver. It's programmable with 13 gestures, 3 memory banks, and with space for up to 39 controls, which is really useful if that's the kind of thing that floats your boat. It isn't cheap, but it's not too expensive either for a device with all that functionality to it. I mean, for instance, you can pick it up on Amazon at the moment for £80. Well, 5 pence short of £80. £79.95. So if you're a proper kind of a tech gadget person who wants to be able to program stuff and just fling the sonic screwdriver in its general direction and with a bit of a sound effect, then that is your cup of tea, no doubt. We also have a very interesting looking book coming up. This is Impossible Worlds. Doctor Who Impossible Worlds, which is a interesting look at Doctor Who from an artistic point of view, from the art departments. It's by Mike Tucker and another chap whose name escapes me at the moment because I can't get the post to come up. I will have it any second now, via the wonder of the interwebs. Stephen Nicholas and Mike Tucker have collaborated on this. It's Stephen Nicholas's first book, and it's a nice big heavy looking thing, covering iconic sets like the TARDIS console room. Discover how designers work with the costume, makeup and special effects, and it covers all 50 plus years of Doctor Who. £35. It's out on the 29th of October, and it's out in hardback. It really looks like a good volume. Now, I did mention that I went out at the weekend to various places. Dinner at Frankie and Benny's, went to IKEA, my nearest IKEA, which was an experience, I can tell you. I also happened to walk into the Disney store. Do you know what I saw in the Disney store? Well, you two might
Disney
know.
Disney stuff.
Well, I was going to say you may know because you may have seen the photo on Facebook. It's basically wall-to-wall Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. And there's like three or four versions of each figure. You got the kind of like a vanilla one, then you've got one with a little collectible piece of gear in it, which if you buy like five other figures, you can build an extra piece of kit, like some sort of droid or a gun placement or whatever. There's the First Order Stormtroopers. There's Kylo Ren. There's a Captain Phasma outfit. It's insane. It really is. It just covers everything. There's even the little ball droid toy. I was completely overwhelmed. And it got me thinking, like, it is September and the movie's out in December, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's you know, it's nearly here. Which is kind of a weird thing. And as I mentioned to you guys, or to everyone on Facebook, it's like my little boy has his own Star Wars movie, just like I did, which is also really strange. I mean, I know that there were small kids in the late 90s who had their old Star Wars movie, but what I mean is my little boy has his own proper Star Wars movie, from what I can see. Yeah, I'm really, really getting excited about that.
I find it funny... I was watching again the making of trailer this morning because it just appeared on Facebook and I thought I hadn't seen it and I had. Mm-hmm. And it is very interesting from a point of view of the PR again, how they are trying to sell this. And again, we've talked about this before, but mm-hmm. how they are so desperately trying to sell this as not being. I just love the way that they don't say it, but it's like, yeah, the pre-trilogy, this isn't it. We've got real monsters. We have physical effects with physical effects and models. We've also got physical effects, models, physical effects. And look at these physical effects and models that we've got. There's very little CG that you can see on the screen. There's a green screen at one point, but don't look at that because behind in front of it, there's a physical effect.
Did you see the Anthony Daniels interview?
I'm not sure.
Well, he basically says that, I can't remember where it was now, but he basically says, well, there was a lot of effect, there's a lot of green screen or blue screen, whatever, in the prequel trilogy, but in this one, it's sets with a little bit of green screen in the background. So, yeah.
But that's it. They're still pitching the same thing, even though there will still be a lot of CG used. There has to be. There was a lot of green screen in the prequel, but then the prequels at a time where that was the way that the industry was, and that was what people were looking for. They were looking for these large panoramas of wonderful views and landscapes, and there was a lot of green screen. As far as I understand, there's a lot of budgetary reasons why there was that as well. And it seems almost a little, it seems a little coy in a weird way. It seems a little underhand that it is constantly really pitching itself as not the other ones, which is essentially what they're doing. And that's how it's pitching. And that's fine, because that is what, you know, its core minority vocal audience want. I was talking to a friend of mine the day, and we were just saying how majority of people who saw the original trilogy, sorry, the prequel trilogy, would have been quite happy with it. Or, you know, they'd have had their issues. But the fact it was so much computer graphics, they wouldn't have given a damn about it. It's only the minority who are journalists and Star Wars fans who really had an axe to grind on it. But because they are so loud, that the promotions for the Star Wars stuff, which, to be fair, is aimed at both those groups, because they're the ones who'll be watching it primarily, looking for this material, is all about it being back to basics. And yeah, but then there was a lot of model work in the prequels as well, but they didn't pitch that at the time because they were pitching the other way, which was look at all these wonderful effects that we can do now.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll stop.
Okay. I should tell you as well, if you're interested in the Star Wars spoilers, that these figures are the larger 12-inch ones all have like 15 or so phrases from the movie.
Wow, so you could buy them all and pretty much listen to the whole movie before actually seeing it.
Very well. Yeah, it's possible, isn't it? It's possible.
They're expensive. Sorry, I'm looking at the 13-inch ones.
Yeah, they're the ones with the voices.
Oh, yeah. I remember my first Star Wars figures was when I was living in Devon. Wow. I was about 4, and I'd had my tooth out, and my mother had managed to afford, I think it was either the C-3PO, or I think more likely it was the Death Star droid, which looked very much like C-3PO, with a slightly different head. You see it in the Sandcrawler.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think it was that one. I think it was an R5-D5, wasn't it? Oh, I can't remember. I've grown up since then.
Isn't R5-D5 the red one?
R5-D5,
blows
yes.
Blows his top?
Yes.
Yeah.
R5-D4, is it? Yeah, I think it is, yeah. Yeah, I've just Googled it. Yeah. And those, though that was, you know, and they were like, I don't know, probably about £1.20 at the time, ridiculous.
My first one, I think, was either R2-D2 or Hoth Luke Skywalker.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I had that as well.
I really don't remember my first one, but I can tell you what I do remember is that my brother and I used to go to this store. It doesn't exist anymore, at least I don't know, in the rest of the U.S., but in Pennsylvania, certainly not. It was called Ports of the World. And it was kind of like a department store, like almost like a lesser brother of Macy's or something like that. You know, it was like a cheaper department store. But they had this section in the toy aisle that just had these two kind of bins full of both Endor Han Solo and the Rancor Keeper. They were all open. They had all their weapons. They had the jacket and for Han, and they had the hood for the Rancor Keeper, and they were a nickel each. Because they were a nickel each and because they were Star Wars figures, my brother and I must have bought like 100 of them. You know, we used the coat for our G.I. Joe figures. We used to make figures out of other things. We used to like make X-Men and Spider-Man and so on out of things. So I'm sure we used parts here, there, and everywhere. But it was just simply like they were a nickel. We can get them. These are Star Wars figures. But for whatever reason, they had a boatload of them just open. No idea to this day still, but that's like my big memory of the toys for some reason.
Okay, well, let's bring it into a more Whovian perspective. What was your first Doctor Who figure?
Wow. It was actually a Daypool figure. It was, I think my first one was a Red Dalek, a Tom Baker, and I believe it was a Silver Nemesis Cyberman.
Okay. Mine was, although I did play with the old Gareth Hunt Fourth Doctor and TARDIS, because we had friends that had that. That's the Fourth Doctor. To listen if you're not aware of the Gareth Hunt reference. Look it up. The The one that I bought, the first one I bought was a Fourth Doctor. I bought it when I was at university in Leeds for however long that lasted, 6 weeks or something. James, what about you?
It was, I don't know, I think the first thing I remember, I think I might have had the Gareth Hunt.
Okay, right.
I think I might have had that. I can't remember well. I think I did. I definitely had, there was a K9 that came out at the time, which had little discs that you would put into its underbelly for different phrases.
Right.
Like looking back and knowing digital technology now is an extremely laborious way to to have a toy. But after that, yeah, it was the Daypol. I think I had the 25th anniversary set, which had the five-sided console and police box and Mel and Green K9 and Seventh Doctor all in one set. And I was very excited because you couldn't get police boxes in any other way. I mean, the only other one had been the Denny Fisher one, which was terrible, and it had sort of gone out of stock by the time I was no longer being stocked by the time I was, you know, about five or six, seven.
Yeah.
You can find it anywhere. So it was, yeah, a big thing. And to be honest, there was a kind of funny irony that it didn't look really like what you'd see on the show, but it did look quite like the one that you'd see on the intro to the show that didn't look like the one in the show. So you could at least enjoy the fact that it looked like something which didn't look like was in the show, but was on the show. There you go. It was the right colour at least.
Okay. Well, listen, I know you guys kind of tire of the idea of doing weekly recommendations, even though I think it was James's idea. But it is recommendation time. I will go first because I've potentially got two. I've got like one, and then I've got one that I can bring in if you're kind of like, you know, deciding to dry up and forget to learn your lines and that sort of. Oh, no, sorry, it's not scripted, is it? Don't let them know it's scripted. So Whitechapel. I've been rewatching Whitechapel on. No, she's interesting. This will tickle you. I've been watching Whitechapel on Amazon and on Now TV because it's on both. It's also on Netflix. It appears to be available on every single streaming platform. Hopefully that is the copyright holders sort of putting it out there to get another series, because I think it deserves one. I've started from the beginning, which I haven't rewatched since 2008 when it first aired.
I've only watched up to the end of series 3, so just to be careful.
Okay. Well, I've only watched series 1 so far today. This weekend, so and only two parts of series 1. It's a 3-part series, so and really enjoyed it, getting back into that whole dynamic and relationship. I'd forgotten how utterly rude the team were to Rupert Penry-Jones's character as well.
Yeah, it's a good series. Have you seen it at all, Brian?
I saw the first season. After that, I did not see it. I might have seen the second, but I think for sure I've seen the first, and I guess I didn't know that there were more after whatever I had seen, to be honest. But it was very good. The first was very good.
I mean, there's four seasons. The first two seasons were like 3 episodes per season, and then the third season they went into a rather interesting mix of 3 parts, 1 parts, or 2 parts for about, I can't remember how many it was, about 12, 8 was there?
There's a few
eight?
More than usual.
Yeah, so there's only about 24 episodes in total, I think, and then it was cancelled in, 2013?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But yeah, it's certainly, given the rubbish that ITV keeps spewing out, it was a real shock that a really decent show, well, I suppose not really a surprise that the real decent show was removed from the schedules.
Yeah,
well, it's crying to be picked up by Netflix or something.
It is. It's a shame that it's that it was dropped. It's a shame as well that ITV have kind of reverted to type since then as well. Going back to like, you know, I know it's populist and I know people loved Cilla Black, but producing dramas like Cilla, when you know, on the other hand, they've got like occasional stuff that doesn't get the plaudits it deserves, like the Christopher Eccleston series. Or the one that John Sim did, was it last year or the year before?
Yeah.
Which is, I've even forgotten what it was called now.
Was it Prey?
Prey, yeah, exactly, yeah. Which were both really, really good, like, cop-related dramas, I suppose. Not your standard cop drama fare.
Well, it's interesting because there was an article the other day which suggested that Netflix has ditched its main distributor contract for movies on the basis that it looks like it's going to take a running gamble at trying to become...
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Become original for people who want original film television, which I think is horrendously dangerous. I'm wondering whether it'll work for them, whether it's too early to take that gamble. Because, I mean, I certainly like Netflix for the fact that if I've watched a long series, I like to occasionally think, I just want something short. I just want to watch a film, something that isn't going to just take me on a long journey and I can just consume. The thought of losing all that, or the fact that you now have to go to another streaming service to go and get your films, like now, would be a real pain. And I would be very careful that the market doesn't start getting carved up. And where that would leave terrestrial and things like ITV and the BBC, I don't know. But at the same time, I would certainly say that Whitechapel should be picked up by one of those streaming giants.
I've also been watching Death in Paradise from the start as well.
I watched the first one a few weeks ago.
Right. Yeah, I just got up to one with Colin Salmon in, which I think is about the sixth episode from the first series, which is very good. So, yeah, that's what I've been recommending for you, dear listener. Any other recommendations this week, guys?
I'm going to recommend a podcast of some friends of mine called The Black Tribbles. The reason I'm going to recommend that is because yesterday I was in Philadelphia for a recording of one of their upcoming podcasts, which was a Family Feud game show podcast, essentially. So one of the guys who started the Black Tribbles, Jason Richards, he asked me to be on his team. And we went out, and I'm going to spoil it for everybody because I don't know if everybody's going to watch anyway. But I'm quite happy to say we won the Family Feud. They called it the Feud of Nations because apparently they pitted their two tribal nations together. Don't ask me how that all started. Got no idea. But it was a heck of a lot of fun. It was a good time. So hopefully it translates well to a podcast. The guys are great. The guys and gals of the tribal nation are great. So I would definitely give that a listen when that comes up if you are so inclined to enjoy a Family Feud styled podcast game show.
I literally have no idea what you just said.
Are we allowed to recommend other podcasts?
I wasn't even aware that there were other podcasts. My head is exploding with questions.
I believe this is recommendations, not traitorous recommendations. It's a different area of the podcast.
Total different genre. So I think we're cool.
Okay.
And you, McCoy?
Ish. I've had a hard week. And so I've been indulging in what has become a comfort blanket source of food. And I say food, obviously, I mean of digital television consumption. And that is of the American series Community, which I'd never actually watched at all. And I just saw it on Netflix, thought I'd give it a go. And I've just been really enjoying it. Just simple, enjoyable. I do love shows where there's a slight progression in characters. There's a sort of not redemption per se in there, but there's a sort of aim to be something a little better, which isn't taken too seriously. But yeah, I have been really enjoying that. And I finished The Thick of It as well, which I never watched before, to be honest. So that was interesting. I could see how they borrowed from Doctor Who's 12th Doctor to create that character. The similarities are very clear there.
Okay. Very droll, I have to say.
Yeah, perhaps not that droll. But.
Okay. All right. Now, listen, I'm going to push this out there for the listener to consider and think about and make arrangements to deal with. We're going to be back next week in a kind of an audio format, and we're going to be on audio format throughout series 9 of Doctor Who. But we're also going to be attempting to the plan at the moment is tentative, but it's quite encouraging and exciting, is that we're going to do weekly live podcasts on a Sunday on YouTube. So these will be video based podcasts with either one or all or two or three or none of us faces, but basically the thing is it'll be live So even if we're moving about or not, you'll be able to interact with us live through Google Hangouts or on Twitter. So, you know, put that in your diaries. These are going to be on Sundays. We haven't finalised the time yet, so don't put a time in because you might be wrong. We'll let you know. All right. Okay. Keep your hair on. But that brings us to the end of this week's Casterbus podcast with a K. And while it wasn't all a dream, it was an extremely nice experience for me, certainly. I don't know about the other guys. Until next time, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Casterbus podcast with a K, available on Stitcher.com and Audio Boom.
Is that supposed to happen?
Please visit the website for more information.
I don't know. He's gone quiet as he hit mute again.
Give all thanks to the hosts.
I was enjoying the music, though. Quite serene.
James McLean.
Well, if he's not here, gone, that gives us an excuse to just have a real rag on him and just tell him what we really think without.
Yeah.
And special thanks to you, the listener.
His hands are just so big.
For without your ears,
it's always creepy to meet him with his hands.
Their magnificent voices be lost in this great
and his height.
Vacuum.
Where does he get off having that?
I don't know. He's bigger than I thought. But I mean, his hands. I mean, he goes to open the door, and then he realizes it's pointless because he can't get his hands through the door.
Wherever you are, good night.
Hi.
Oh.
Goes on a bit, this one.
You realise we couldn't hear half of that?
You couldn't? Why not?
Well, you disappeared. Have you not been listening
completely
to us?
No, I disappeared. A DHL man came to the door. And I've got a bad knee. So I thought, this is going to be noisy. I'll put the phone on mute. I'll put Skype on mute. So was it just complete silence?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I'm leaving that in. I'll dub the tune back into the second track, maybe.